Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Yeah, thanks, MOTAT. Brilliant. Brilliant work.
Absolutely.
So, well, should we just get into it? I think there's lots to talk about.
That's a good plan. We could talk just about random stuff for a few minutes if
but
you want.
But nobody comes to listen to The Wire to talk about random stuff, do
no,
we?
No, of course not.
We're here to talk about the climate emergency causing heat waves.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say the. It's the climate emergency.
Well, I think it's just one big massive
causing specific
scary
heat
emergency.
Waves.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you may have heard Europe's sweltering, record high temperatures in France and other places. And, you know, in the past, we've had extreme weather events. And they say, okay, well, you can't directly link this to climate change. You know, in the States, we used to have massive snowfalls, and you say, well, you can't connect this to climate change. And in summer, you'd be record heat waves, and can't connect it to climate change. And I think because the idea was this is just one-off isolated events.
Yeah, what
you
is
can
it?
Have extremes. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is climate change.
Yeah. It's just saying that there are always outliers or that sort of thing.
Right.
So you can dismiss these as an outlier.
Well, you can dismiss them, but for only so long.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if we're reaching
outliers,
that point.
And I think it's fair to say we've reached that point, you know. And so, you know, people have analyzed the data, looked at statistics, and they're saying, really, yeah, this extreme weather event is worse because of climate change. This is why it's happening now. And they're saying now that the likelihood of having extreme weather is tens or even hundreds of times greater. The likelihood of having extreme weather is tens or hundreds of times greater now than it was about 100 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. That's a big number.
And it's difficult. Is it 10 times, 100 times? Is it less than that, more than that? But there is a higher likelihood now, without a doubt, than there was 100 years ago. And this is now recognised.
And it's also that they're happening more frequently, isn't it?
Yes.
Because, I mean, I remember, last year I was in Europe, actually, mm-hmm. at this time, and it was super hot. And they were talking about, I came back to New Zealand just before the sort of major kind of heat waves kicked in July at this time.
Right.
So, I mean, this is what they're probably having again this year. Is it this common that, I mean, every year?
I mean, I think that's it. If you have an isolated event, it's an isolated event. You know, it doesn't one event doesn't necessarily mean that there is now this new trend.
Mm.
But these are not no longer isolated events. Year on year, we're having higher temperatures, more extreme weather. You know, big snowfalls even and things like that, just extreme weather events in the US and Europe and other places, and these are no longer isolated events.
Yeah.
This is, you can expect extreme weather now to occur more frequently than it used to.
Right, and there will be less sort of disputing of it too as being linked to.
I think so, and as more of these happen, as the evidence gets stronger, you know, we understand the behavior in the atmosphere, the climate science better and better and better. You know, there's just as if there was any more question anymore, but the questions have to be just quashed.
Because also here, we're in winter, but it's sort of one of the most driest winters that we're experiencing. And
absolutely.
There has been some warm days, some really
yeah,
warm
I mean,
days.
Today is overcast, but it's, what,
but it's
17,
fairly,
18
yeah.
degrees?
So that's weird, right? That's, we're, you know, we're...
This isn't, yeah, or it doesn't feel
or
like
it's,
winter to
or
me.
It's, and it's becoming less weird, right? This is becoming
right.
more and more common that we're having
right.
these weird summers and weird winters. And Sherry's joined us in the studio because I'm guessing she's finished her interview.
I had a question. I don't know if this has been asked, but I've heard some people say that global warming or climate change is just the natural process of the Earth.
Nah,
all right.
No, I mean, no.
Yes, there are changes in atmospheric conditions or the climate?
There are climate cycles.
Mm.
We've had ice ages before. We've had periods where the weather's been warmer before. But these take thousands of years to develop, right? What's been happening here has taken less than 50 years.
Ooh.
Okay, this is pretty indisputably now, this is a man-made change. You know, it's obviously superimposed on whatever natural cycles are going on, but the rapidity, the speed of this change, the scale of the change now, I think it's it can't be explained by anything else.
And some people, for example, The Guardian, have actually changed their way of talking about it. Because also, wasn't it in America there was this kind of, I mean, I don't know if this is conspiracy or people talking about how the government actually changed, or they did focus groups saying, which sounds worse, climate change or global warming? Global warming sounds more scary, so we'll call it climate change.
That's right. So they coined the phrase, I think. I'm not sure who coined it, but I think was some politician.
But it was a total PR move, essentially. So now we're talking climate change, but people, like I say, The Guardian have changed to saying climate emergency, climate destruction, that sort of, so that we can actually, climate crisis, so we're using language that actually shows what
absolutely
state we're in.
Absolutely. And it is, I like climate crisis, because global warming doesn't cover, you know, there's extreme weather, there's extreme heat spells, hot spells, extreme cold spells, you know, storms, all that sort of stuff, but it's all precipitated by this climate emergency.
Okay. All right, moving on to, I suppose, should we stick with the global warming?
Yeah, let's do the last one.
So we'll skip and we'll do robots last. So airplanes and global warming. Now, people would, I would think that there is obviously a relationship between airplanes and aviation and carbon emissions, right? So, of course, airplanes are going to add to global warming.
Yes.
So what's the story? What's new about this?
So this is about airplane contrails. Those are the sort of white wispy clouds that you see behind jet planes in the sky. It sort of carries on from what we were just talking about. As we understand and can model the climate in more and more detail, we start to be able to take into account these smaller and smaller effects. Okay, and you can see, so clouds are important, obviously, for the climate, recently, the scientists have started to take into account what are the effect of these contrails, these airplane contrails, on the environment. What they've found out is that the airplane contrails have actually a bigger warming effect on the atmosphere than the carbon emissions themselves.
Oh my gosh!
So previously, the airplane industry has received a lot of criticism because there's a lot of CO2 emissions from airplane jet engines, and that's a big release of carbon into the atmosphere, and which is bad for climate warming. But until recently, scientists haven't been able to separate the effects of these, you know, relatively small clouds. On the climate, and what they've found is that they've been able to separate, give contrails their own category, separate from natural clouds, and that's allowed them to model the qualities of these human-made clouds, and study how they interact with the rest of the atmosphere. Yeah, and so what they've found is that the airplanes actually emit soot into the upper atmosphere, and it's these soot particles that cause a significant warming effect in the atmosphere. Okay, and you know that's now being taken into account.
Right.
Overall, in terms of all global emissions, it's a tiny fraction. Okay, but it could be particularly important to the airplane industry. Yeah,
especially given if it's worse than the carbon emissions in terms of fuel, I'm guessing that you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, there's more and more airplanes in the sky. The levels of soot and contrail cirrus clouds, the clouds that go with them, will continue to rise. Yeah. And so, you know, this is even these smaller effects, we should think about ways of ameliorating them, you know, getting rid of them. Yeah.
Note on aviation and airplanes and carbon emissions. Apparently, in New Zealand, you know how you can choose to offset your carbon emission if you buy a flight.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, only 1.4% of their carbon emissions overall are actually offset by people doing that.
Right.
Yeah, and people are saying, you know, why is it that the customer should be the one that's necessarily offsetting that?
Yeah.
You know, the company itself should be taking more of a step to actually ensure that. But like you say, overall, in terms of New Zealand's carbon emissions, I think aeroplanes make up 4% or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty small. But now there's this extra thing that they weren't when they weren't
taking exactly, account of. And now there'll be so more. And also, more if we do all of the little things as well as the big things, mm-hmm. anyway.
And okay. So to get rid of this, maybe that they need to find more efficient fuels that release less soot into the atmosphere. You know, fuels that burn more efficiently, don't spew out little bits of carbon out of the back of the engines. So that's, you know, science research that comes into this. How do we actually make this more efficient?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Lots to do. Hey, Marcus.
Oh, yeah. Tons.
Our last story. Why is it that we find some robots a little creepy?
So this is, have you ever heard of the Uncanny Valley?
Yeah.
No.
You've heard of this?
Yeah. It's when it's like slightly human, but not quite.
Slightly human, but not quite.
Yeah, so you've probably seen these, ever more sophisticated robots that look more and more like a human, like a regular person. But there's, you can still tell them apart, and they're close, but they're not quite there. Mm. And there's a if you get close enough, there is this sort of region where it looks a bit scary. Yeah, it looks a bit weird.
When you say close enough, like when you're right face to face or something, you can see something on the robot, or it triggers something in your mind.
So this is like it's an unsettling sensation. Right, it's often caused by robots or animations that look almost, but not quite human. Yeah, it's like that looks a bit strange.
In what way that it unsettles you because you're unsure of what it could be, or?
Well, that's what they're trying to figure out. So, what is the cause of this? Yeah, and or what part of the brain is responsible for this response? And this has been well known and studied for a long time, I think. And this coined this term, the uncanny valley. It's like something's uncannily close, but not quite, and it's a bit strange looking, a bit unsettling. And so they've done this study, and they've looked at the appearance. So they've got a large number of people to look at the appearance of hyper-realistic robots, the robots that are made to look human.
Right.
Yeah. And or they looked at pictures of people whose features were slightly distorted through plastic surgery or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, and they rated each picture on the likability and how human-like the figures appeared. Yeah, and then after that they chose between pairs of these pictures based on which subject they would rather receive a gift from.
Whoa,
it's an interesting way to
So I thought it was an interesting way of sort of.
Because you might be more suspicious about the gift if you're suspicious about the person.
I think so. Yes.
Why are they doing these experiments? What are they trying to figure out?
There's a big push to make
AI,
robots, or androids, whatever you want to call them, more human-like.
Right.
Right.
But
you don't want your robot to walk into the room and you freak out and jump behind the sofa.
So, in the sense of trying to make them more human, so that we're more settled by their presence.
Yes.
But you will there'll be a time
eventually,
when they
are.
But yeah, I suppose okay, is this.
And I think psychologically it's an interesting thing to understand. Yeah.
And certainly what it is that sets off our kind of
right. And so in this study the participants generally rated the more human like candidates as more likable. Okay, so if you look more human, you were generally rated as being more likable.
Oh, the poor robots.
Right. and a similar sort of trend emerged when they judged which figures were more trustworthy gift givers.
Mm.
All right, and so they were doing this, and their brains were being scanned at the same time, and they revealed that activity in the it's called the ventromedial prefrontal cortex. It was a region involved in making value judgments.
Wow.
Mirrored these uncanny valley reactions. So it's like people were, this part of the brain lit up when they were dealing with this not quite human-like sort of.
Or having to make that decision.
Android,
being, So literally your something in your brain goes off.
Right. And so the activity was higher in response, higher in response to more human light pictures, but dipped quite a lot in response to the artificial. So it's as if you needed this response to feel trust towards this person,
or okay.
To feel this person would likeable.
And if it didn't go off, you would feel more unsettled and therefore less likely to trust.
Exactly.
It's probably some survival thing from back when we had to hunt wolves. I'm just trying to understand.
I think we have to. I guess we've evolved to recognize human features.
Yeah.
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
You know,
and therefore
you
be safe.
Someone,
or,
right. And to recognize a family member or a parent or something like that.
And so, when you see the wolf, you're like,
nah. don't want to get it from you.
Or someone that looks not a little bit like you're a trustworthy person, but not quite. You know? And there should be a strong response against that person.
Wow.
An impersonator or something like that.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Marcus, for coming in.
You're very welcome.
Some dire news, though, about the climate crisis. Okay. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Sorry to depress you all.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.